What's it like to be a chief executive in Wisconsin? I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent, and the morning show has been reaching out to local CEOs across the state to find out what they see in business as well as life in Wisconsin. Our guest this morning, Rob Benz, CEO of the regional airline Air Wisconsin in Appleton. And while you may not recognize the company name, if you fly, then you know well United Express, and in Wisconsin, that's Air Wisconsin. So what do you want to know about what it's like to run a local airline that first got off the ground way back in 1965? Join us with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Rob, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, Lee, thank you for having me today.
Let's start with the 31 to 38,000 foot overview of Air Wisconsin. Give us some idea of just briefly about the history of this company.
Yeah, so as you said, it's a company that's been in business and been in Appleton since 1965. It started with local businessmen raising funds to develop an airline to fly between Appleton and Chicago. It's grown since then, both organically and by acquisition. And we've been here in Appleton for 57 years. And you rightly said maybe many people haven't heard of Air Wisconsin, even though we've been here for so long. And that's because we are a regional airline. There's about 10 or so in the U.S. And the nature of what we do is we fly on long-term contracts for major airlines. We fly their regional routes in and out of their hubs. And so currently our contract is with United Airlines, and we have 64 aircraft that are in United Express livery. And when you walk through the door, you'll see operated by Air Wisconsin. But the nature of that relationship is it's our aircraft, it's our pilots, it's our flight attendants, it's our maintenance professionals, and it is United paying us a fee per departure. But they're United routes, they sell the tickets, they take the economic risk on the flights, and they work with us so that they can provide the fuel and the catering and the baggage handling. So we've been doing this a very long time, but usually on our planes you see other airlines' name and livery.
Well, and no different than anybody else, it was a challenge during the pandemic, but what are some of the challenges you were facing and Air Wisconsin sees for the airline industry in 2022, Rob?
Well, you know, there's several challenges out there. Obviously, there's supply chain challenges, which hasn't caused us much problems. You know, we're very good in terms of parts, making sure that we see what we need for the future and securing it well in advance, and in this environment, having sufficient parts to make sure we can run an efficient operation. Little things, you know, if one type of pretzel isn't available, you can have another. But the two big things that are affecting all the airlines, the biggest is a pilot shortage. And so there is a significant pilot shortage that's affecting the entire country. And it's something that we've all seen coming, because there's a large percentage of pilots who are baby boomers who are all going to retire at the same time, generally in the same time. And during the pandemic, many of those pilots retired early. And during the pandemic, there wasn't a flow of many pilots coming into the profession. And so what we've seen is as the pandemic has eased, demand has come back stronger than everyone thought. And so we see a pilot shortage, and you see airlines coming back to try to beat demand, but demand is greater than supply at the moment.
So how is Air Wisconsin dealing with this? From the aviation industry publication Simple Flying, they say that you are this month raising salaries for starting co-pilots to $60 an hour. Is that part of the strategy?
Yeah, that's part of the strategy. And so that's a massive pay increase just from the past few months. We went from just under $39 an hour to $60 an hour, over 50% pay increase, to make sure that we are competitive. And also, you know, beyond just the hourly rate, we offer, you know, Cadillac health care plans and very generous 401k match plans, better than a lot of larger airlines, and, you know, worldwide travel privileges for pilots and their family, all employees in their families. And so, you know, as wages go up, what we hope to see in the industry is you'll have more people coming into the industry. But, you know, if you lose a pilot, if a pilot moves from an Air Wisconsin United, and you get 2 weeks' notice. It could take you up to 4 months to hire and train a new pilot. And so, you know, the market will work itself out eventually, but it's going to take time.
Rob Binns, our guest, CEO of Air Wisconsin, based in Appleton, dating back to 1965. And I think there was another challenge that you'd that was on the list here. Pilot shortage, one of the big ones. What's the second?
A second would be a mechanic shortage. So an airline mechanic is called an AMP, an airframe and power plant mechanic. And this is a great profession for people to want to get into who don't want to go to college, want to get a good technical qualification that is high paying. So, you know, for pilots and training, we think of this part of Wisconsin, we have Fox Valley Tech. And, you know, that school also offers instructions for becoming an AMP mechanic. And so for us, as those people are going through school, as they're training, we offer an apprenticeship program that pays $20 an hour. And once they get their certification, it goes up to $33 an hour. We then offer $20,000 in tuition reimbursement and a $10,000 signing contract. And on top of that, again, kind of Cadillac healthcare, 401k benefits, ability to travel worldwide with their families. And so it is a wonderful profession that's highly in demand. And so we're seeing more people, you know, as we've put up those pay and benefits, we're seeing more people come into the profession, and the market forces will work more quickly than it will a pilot, because, you know, deciding to become an AMP mechanic, going through the school and coming out is a bit of a quicker process than deciding to become a pilot.
Yeah. What is the process for becoming a pilot, and what's that pipeline look like from your perspective, Rob?
Yeah, the pipeline, to kind of put it in rough numbers, you know, there's some contention about the numbers, but it looks like the whole country will need about 12,000 pilots per year for the foreseeable future. And as a country, we've been doing 7,000-8,000 pilots per year. So that infrastructure will have to grow in order to allow more pilots to come through the pipeline. Normally what you do, there's different paths, but you go to a flight school like Fox Valley and you get your private pilot license. And then you keep going to instructions and you get your commercial pilot license, which allows you to be paid for flying. And what a lot of those people then do is get a certified flight instructor license so they can teach other people to fly. Because once you get that commercial pilot license, you have to build 1,500 hours of flying to then get something that's called the Airline Transport Pilot Certificate, the ATP certificate. And that's the certificate you need to come to the major leagues like Air Wisconsin and to fly for major airlines. And so, you know, go ahead, Lee.
Well, I was just, I wanted to follow up on this because Josh in Oak Creek has a question about getting his pilot's license. Josh, good morning. You're on the air with Rob Binns, CEO of Air Wisconsin.
Hey, guys. So, yeah, I was listening to what you guys were talking about with having training for the mechanical side, and I'm going to be a pilot someday. I'm going to put myself through it.
There you go.
I was wondering if you had internal stuff at your business for training to where, you know, if I got a job with you, I could learn how to fly and eventually be flying for you.
Josh, you got any flight experience yet?
Outside stuff?
Do you have any flight
Sorry?
Experience?
I have flown out of Craig's Field on a few. I forget what they call them. It's like introductory flights, and I'm going to do it. It's just, you know,
Rob,
I'm
Josh
just wondering
is
wondering if his place has, you know, an internal training program or not.
Josh wants to be a pilot, Rob.
Yeah, Josh, please become a pilot. convince all your friends to become pilots as well. And who better to fly for than an Air Wisconsin airline? But we don't do the training ourselves in this area. Fox Valley Tech is a great place to go to. We work closely with them. Love to hire the pilots to come through their process. But, you know, part of the issue, it is expensive to become a pilot. It could be up to $100,000 in cost to become a pilot, because once you get that, you know, commercial pilot license, you have to build these 1,500 hours before you can come to us. And a lot of people build that by either becoming a certified flight instructor and training other pilots, or they tow banners in the sky, or they fly crop dusters, or they take small planes that they rent or buy, and they, what we say, punch holes in the sky. So, you know, this is a requirement, a new requirement. It used to be 250 hours. It's now 1,500 hours. That came about in 2013. So, you know, that's an expense for pilots, and it takes them, you know, kind of the quickest you can come through the process is about 2 years.
Josh, go and get those. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, yes, start flying, get those 1,500 hours built. But when you come to an airline like Air Wisconsin, you know, what we offer, that $60 in initial pay, you know, that moves up into $100+ when you become a captain. And when Air Wisconsin hires a pilot, when they put in a couple of years at Air Wisconsin, they have a path then to go to United. And so
wow.
From United, what you want to do as a pilot is, we kind of see this cycle of people coming through regional carriers like Air Wisconsin. Some stay here for 20+ years. Others, after a few years, move up to United or Delta and American. Because what a lot of pilots want to do is they want to become a captain on a wide-body international aircraft. Those jobs can pay as much as $350,000. So there's kind of a flow program of coming to Air Wisconsin and moving on to major airlines.
Rob Benn, CEO of Air Wisconsin, based out of Appleton, dating back to 1965, the regional airline that flies under the name United Express. And if you have a question for our CEO this morning, join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. What about infrastructure? What about the fleet? And what about the customer experience? I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Morning Show series, talking with CEOs from across the state, continues this morning with our guest, Rob Benn, CEO of Air Wisconsin in Appleton, the regional airline that flies under the name United Express. If you have a question for him this morning, join us at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn. And Rob, I wanted to ask you about infrastructure because you'd mentioned it, and the latest infrastructure bill sets aside $20 billion for airport infrastructure. Where would you like to see that money applied for airlines and the airline industry in Wisconsin?
Well, you know, infrastructure investments in airports is always welcome. I think what you see in the infrastructure today, obviously, you know, there's a lot of companies, a lot of areas that are struggling for workforce. So when you fly an aircraft, it isn't just your airline and your workers. You know, you need a lot of third parties to make sure they're staffed. And so obviously you need fuel in the airplane. That fueler is a third party. You need catering. That's a third party. People to handle bags. That's a third party. And you need good air traffic control, obviously. And we've seen some shortages in staffing and air traffic control. And all those things kind of come together when there's thunderstorms in the summer and all those points are stressed. That can make the travel experience less than ideal. But I think coming up with ideas of how we expand the pilot base in the country, how we draw more people to the profession. We think of, you know, pilots traditionally have been white middle-aged men. How we get more minorities, more women into the profession, making investments in those areas. I think it's good not just for the airlines, but for the traveling public.
Let's go back to your questions for our guest, Rob Benn, CEO of Air Wisconsin, taking your calls at 1-800-642-1234, where Lindsay and DeSoto standing by. Lindsay, good morning. You're on the air with Rob Benn.
Good morning. I certainly appreciate this program because at DeSoto High School, we offer aviation ground school as an elective credit for our students. We've done that for about 8 years now. We have a 5-screen simulator that our computer kids developed, and it has programming that looks very geographically Correct. And they can land at the Viroqua Airport, the La Crosse Airport, and it all looks realistic. So I'm just wondering, do you work with any high schools to provide information on opportunities to become pilots for your company?
And Lindsay, before we get to Rob's question, I have a question for you. After students are done taking this flight simulation course, is there anything, do they get any certification or anything?
Well, they're eligible to take the FAA exam, kind of like the behind the wheel. When you're driving a car, you take a written exam, and then you go out and get behind the wheel and drive. Mm-hmm. So they can take that FAA exam. And then we work with Junior Eagles. We have a flight instructor who works with us, and they actually go up and fly a plane. But the work they have on those simulators really makes them pretty competent. And they're able to taxi, take off. They get a lot of help on the landing. That's the challenging part. But they do a lot of maneuvers in the air in their 30-minute to one-hour flight experience.
Lindsay, thank you so much. Rob Binns talking about the pilot shortage, the pilot pipeline, and then DeSoto High School's flight simulator.
Yeah, that's wonderful that you have that type of program. Congratulate you on doing that. You know, we work with local groups and high schools mostly on an ad hoc basis. If you look at us at airwhisk.com, if you'd like one of us to come speak to your class, we'd love to do that. We'd like to excite people about an aviation career. But I think, you know, it'd be wonderful if more high schools are doing what you're doing.
Rob, I'm curious because it's something I have to factor in when it comes to my automobile. How is a fleet of airplanes and an airline company factor in fuel when it's, you know, up and down, back and forth, it's all over the map? How do you, as a CEO, factor that?
Yeah, and we're fortunate because the nature of the contract that we have, which is a fee per departure, all of our fuel is a pass-through cost to United. So they take the fuel risk on flying our routes. Obviously, we introduce programs that ensure fuel efficiency for our customer, but it's United taking the fuel risk. And for those companies that are taking the fuel risk, it depends on what's going on in the market. I think in today's market, they're able to pass most of that on to consumers in terms of prices. When there's greater competition, they're going to have to eat some of that cost as well.
The chief executive has to see into the future, or at least try their very best. So, Rob Binns, I will ask you to peer into the future of the airline industry and Air Wisconsin's place in it, and tell us what you see.
Well, I see it kind of coming back. We've seen strong demand come back since the pandemic. Airlines aren't flying as many flights as they'd like to. They don't fly as many flights as demand would like us to because of a shortage, particularly of pilots. I think that's going to take some time to work itself out. But Air Wisconsin, one of the things we've been very prudent in what we've decided to do. You know, we have 1,200 employees, 500 here in Wisconsin, bases at Chicago and Washington Dulles. We fly to 50 cities around the country and into Canada as well. And I see us continue to grow.
And what can be done for the consumer experience for people who are flying and have frustrations at the airport? Is from your perspective, what can be done for them?
Yeah, and this is going to sound self-serving, but we, as of earlier this week, we had not had a controllable cancellation in over 65 days, which is kind of amazing. In the best of times, and what you're hearing in the press, and part of that is we've always been prudent in what we do. So when we work with United, we tell them what number of flights we're comfortable on flying, and we don't bite off more than we can chew. We set ourselves operational goals for the summer, and we have met and exceeded those goals. Now other airlines have struggled because, you know, when demand came back and they saw that potential revenue, they probably tried to fly more than they actually could. And when you mix that with all these other companies, these support companies that are short staff, and you mix that with what's going on, you know, with summer weather, it's made for not a great travel experience for some people. And I think it's getting better. You've seen some of those large airlines cut their schedules to make sure you know, they have sufficient resources to fly their flights on time.
Rob, I want to thank you for joining us this morning, and very much appreciate your point of view. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Lee.
Rob Binns is the CEO of Air Wisconsin, based out of Appleton. It goes back to 1965. This regional airline flies under the name United Express. Ahead this hour, we talk with Republican primary candidate. We're scheduled to talk with a Republican primary candidate for Attorney General Eric Toney about his goals if he were to take office. With the partisan primary now less than 2 weeks away, August 9th, we'll hit the candidates and ask, find out what they have to say, and also invite you to the conversation to ask your questions as well for the Republican primary candidate for Attorney General Eric Toney. Phone number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn. News is next here on the Ideas Network. This is The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent, and our next guest has been the district attorney of Fond du Lac County for the last 10 years. Eric Toney is also one of three candidates on the August 9th primary ballot vying to be the Republican nominee for state attorney general. What questions do you have for this candidate and how he would lead the Wisconsin Department of Justice? Join us. 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email your question this morning to ideas@wpr.org. District Attorney Eric Toney, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, good morning. Thank you so much for having me on this beautiful day.
You bet. You are on the ballot August 9th, along with two others, Adam Jarkow and Karen Mueller. Why should voters choose you?
Well, you know, we are seeing historic violence and drugs, murder rates in many parts of Wisconsin, especially Milwaukee, which is on pace to set its third straight year of murder records. And our attorney general is our top cop in charge of our crime labs, our DCI law enforcement officers, training and standards for our police officers. They're in charge of frontline prosecutors, the prosecutors that preserve our convictions on appeal, the Office of Crime Victim Services, and the Office of School Safety. And we need an experienced attorney general that can hit the ground running, because we don't have time for on-the-job training. In addition to being a district attorney for nearly 10 years now that has prosecuted, you name the case, from cold case homicides, violent crime, complex drug conspiracies, racketeering, sexual assault, to drunk driving, I've used and worked to deploy those DOJ resources to help keep our community safe, working with our law enforcement. But on top of that, I am also the president of the Wisconsin District Attorneys Association, where we work with our Department of Justice, our public defenders, the court system, and prosecutors to help put forth a criminal justice coalition budget, where I have the knowledge and experience on these budgetary issues. And on top of that, I've got a near decade-long track record of being tough on crime, and being the son of a cop has colored how I view prosecuting and how I will handle myself as the attorney general here in Wisconsin. And I'm proud to be law enforcement's choice in this race for attorney general, with over 100 sheriffs, DAs, and police chiefs across Wisconsin that have already endorsed me. And that's bipartisan support from Republican and Democrat sheriffs and DAs that recognize we need a new attorney general that's going to make public safety our top priority. And I've been endorsed by the Racine and Milwaukee Police Associations and the Wisconsin Fraternal Order of Police. And we haven't elected an attorney general without prosecution experience in about, I think, about 60 years. And I'm the only candidate in our Republican primary that has ever prosecuted a case.
Eric Toney, were you to be Wisconsin's next state attorney general, what would your plan be to address crime in Milwaukee?
Well, the sad reality is our current attorney general has effectively defunded police and prosecutors from our Department of Justice. He's left about 25 or so DCI positions unfilled. He's left prosecutor positions unfilled, and he's also mismanaged our crime lab, where compared to Brad Schimmel when he was our attorney general, Josh Call is taking in less items to test. He's testing thousands of less items, and he's taking longer to do it in many categories, including DNA. So number one, we have to right the ship, get our crime labs streamlined, get them efficient. They've got great employees that do fantastic work. We need to make sure the law enforcement portions are fully staffed and funded, but we also have to look at giving our Attorney General original prosecution authority over Milwaukee County to take over the cases that they're unable or unwilling to prosecute. Because if we can protect Milwaukee, we protect the rest of Wisconsin, because that violent crime and drugs from Milwaukee literally bleeds across our state. And our Attorney General can be a huge resource in helping curb the violence and drugs in Milwaukee, as law enforcement in Milwaukee is severely understaffed. You know, the most recent budget proposal that I saw had about 25 less Milwaukee police officers proposed compared to the budget before that, which is the wrong direction as we see the violence and property crime and drugs that are happening in Milwaukee and across Wisconsin. But we also need to improve our cash bail system. And part of that process is a constitutional amendment where we would require courts to consider the dangerousness of criminals, not just if they're likely to appear in court when setting cash bail. And what I'd also like to see is a statutory change that would define what it means in our statutes for someone to be likely to appear in court, because prosecutors like myself and others across Wisconsin make arguments about the potential penalties someone faces, mandatory minimums, the number of open cases, lack of ties, substance abuse, all kinds of different things, the dangerousness of somebody that could make someone less likely to appear in court. And many judges accept that as a way that cash bail should be imposed, but some courts do not. And we need to make a statutory change to force judges to consider those factors. But we also need mandatory minimums on violent crime to make sure people understand there will be consequences if they're going to be committing these violent crimes in our communities. And these are some of the common sense things that we can do that will make a difference on keeping people safe, because I am in my 10th year as the DA of Fond du Lac County, but I also spent about 2.5 years in private practice where I did juvenile mental health law, a little bit of bankruptcy and criminal defense. And I would sit across from my clients and would talk about, you know, sometimes if law enforcement was under-resourced or the case just wasn't valued as much, they would wonder, being up in Fond du Lac County, why that case was cared about there compared to other places, maybe, say, Milwaukee. And they thought, well, if I can get away with it in Milwaukee, I can get away with it anywhere. And the sad reality of how under-resourced Milwaukee law enforcement is, their homicide clearance rate, at least last year at one point, was under 50% because they don't have enough officers to investigate. And if you get away with murder in Milwaukee, you're going to think you can get away with it anywhere. And that doesn't even include the non-fatal shootings, the rampant vehicle theft and other crime that we see in Milwaukee, that we have to gain control of our largest city to protect the rest of Wisconsin.
Got a question here, Eric, Tony, from Matt from Janesville, who wants to know, and it sounds like a little bit of a follow-up, how you'd address mass incarceration in Wisconsin and how you deal with full jails when you're talking about mandatory minimum sentencing.
You know, we have some jails have plenty of room, and the sheriffs across Wisconsin are pretty acutely aware of their capacity in our jails, working with our counties to remodel, expand, and build jails when needed. Our county in Fond du Lac is looking at doing that right now. And if it means we have to look at building a new prison, that's something that we have to consider, because we're talking about public safety. But one of the things we have to look at is when people are incarcerated, what are we doing with them, especially when they have substance abuse issues? Because there are times where it might be an opioid addict, alcohol, and if they get into what's called the substance abuse programming, they might not get into that program until maybe about the last 6 months or so of their sentence, which can cut their sentence short and get them out early. And it makes no sense. What we should be doing is having people in these programs from the day they enter prison, not just the last 6 months, so they can build those years of habits to live a clean, sober lifestyle when they're released from prison. We also need to make sure that when we have people on supervision, whether it's probation or extended supervision, that our probation agents actually have the resources to manage and supervise these individuals so that they know that there are consequences, that we can do appropriate drug testing and intervention so that they're not committing new crimes to the point that they have to get revoked and sent back to prison. Ultimately, when we see people in the criminal justice system, we don't want to see them again unless it happens to be at the grocery store. We don't want to have those repeat criminals coming through, and we have to look at improving how we're handling people when they're in the system. I mean, the reality is Tony Evers, he has made it easier for people to get into some of these earned release programs sooner. And on top of that, he's tied the hands of probation agents that if they want to revoke somebody, they're not essentially able to consider the new crime that's been committed in the amount of time they would recommend for reincarceration if the prosecutor hasn't charged the case, which is it's a horrible situation because as prosecutors, we have a different legal standard in what we need to prove beyond a reasonable doubt than what we see in our probation system. So we need to make sure that we're giving our probation agents the resources to hold those offenders accountable so they don't want to commit new crimes. And so there's many different ways that we need to tackle this.
Eric Toney, Fond du Lac County District Attorney, a Republican candidate for Attorney General on the primary ballot August 9th. How do you weigh the constitutional rights of gun ownership against the push for reducing gun violence in Wisconsin?
Well, you know, I think one thing you said is very clear, a constitutional right. We have a Second Amendment and that we must preserve and protect that at all costs. We don't pick and choose when we're going to defend or protect our constitutional rights. And among some, that might not be popular, but we have to protect our right to bear arms. And we have laws on the books right now. You know, when I was in private practice, I did a lot of Chapter 51 mental health commitment cases where if somebody has a major mental illness, they're a danger to themselves or others, and it's treatable, that they can go through that civil commitment process. They get due process, they get a jury trial if they'd like. And if they end up with that finding, that would impact their firearms rights, but they're getting due process, not some of the other paths that I've seen, which I don't support, red flag laws. We need to make sure that we're protecting our constitutional rights. And we have a people problem, not a gun problem here in Wisconsin, where we have to address the underlying issues, because all too often, when there's a mental health call, law enforcement is called to it, and there's insufficient resources for law enforcement to get this person into the treatment that they need. And oftentimes they may end up in a county jail. And so we have to make sure we're expanding out mental health resources so that we can start driving down this type of violence.
Eric Toney, Republican candidate for Attorney General. Now, you've made election integrity a prominent theme of your campaign. Multiple reviews of the 2020 election have found no evidence of any widespread fraud and affirmed President Joe Biden's defeat over former President Donald Trump. But what concerns you in how elections are being run in Wisconsin?
Well, you know, one thing to me, and I've yet to find a person that disagrees with this, we want to make sure every ballot in Wisconsin is treated and counted the same, regardless of which county those votes are cast in. And so that's something that I've pushed for, that if we see some of those laws that are broken and fraud, which we've had some in Fond du Lac County, we're prosecuting about 7 cases. We just had one conviction where somebody, well, a group of people, but I'll speak to this one case specifically because he's been convicted, illegally registering to vote with a P.O. box. And the person didn't even live in Fond du Lac County and drove to Fond du Lac County to vote. And that means they would have the opportunity to vote in legislative races, a congressional race that they don't even live in. And that becomes even more pronounced if it's a local election where you talk about your school boards, village boards, town boards, city councils, where somebody could be voting in one of those elections for someone they don't even live in, with the razor thin margins that we sometimes see in those races. So we need to protect the cornerstone of our democracy, which is our elections. We want people to vote. We want to make sure they've got the opportunity to do it. We just want to make sure everybody is playing by the same rules, because the reality is the Wisconsin Election Commission didn't follow the law in 2020 when they suspended special voting deputies. And there's literally no argument to support the fact that they did follow the law. And I had an opportunity to review the investigation from the Racine County Sheriff's Office. And the Wisconsin Election Commission has the authority to give out guidance. They don't have the authority to give out directives. But that's what they did. They gave out a directive telling clerks they shall not dispatch special voting deputies, and clerks followed that directive almost to a T throughout Wisconsin. And the Wisconsin Election Commission did not have the authority to, you know, violate a state law. That's the legislature's job to create statutes. And so we need to make sure that we have a level playing field across Wisconsin. And that's why I filed a verified complaint with the governor's office demanding that he remove some of those board members that broke the law. And the sad reality is the governor didn't even respond to the complaint. If he thought that they were right on the law, that's all he had to do was respond and say, no, they followed the law. There's nothing to see here. But he knows they didn't follow the law. That's why he didn't even bother to respond. And so you know, we need to just make sure that we are ensuring every ballot is treated and counted the same across Wisconsin and not having different rules for different counties, because we want to make sure that everybody's vote is treated the same.
Eric, Tony, thank you for joining us this morning.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
Fond du Lac County District Attorney Eric Tony is a Republican candidate for Attorney General in the statewide primary election Tuesday, August 9th. Now, the Ideas Network is working to schedule more candidate interviews before that election, and you can find more election coverage from Wisconsin Public Radio at WPR.org/election22. That's WPR.org/election22. Up next, the morning show goes to the dogs. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. So what's your dog's favorite TV show? It's worth asking. I'm Lee Rayburn. This is The Morning Show, and I'm only asking because our next guest is recruiting you and your pup for their research, studying the vision of canines and how their sight can degrade over time. Maybe you and your doggo can be a part of helping other dogs in the future see better longer. How can you help? Well, what's your dog's favorite TV show? Join us, 1-800-642-1234, with questions you may have about how you can help other dogs. Fran Mawad is a veterinary ophthalmologist and professor at the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. Freya, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm excited about this because I've known some old doggos as their eyes get cloudy, and I'm wondering what can we do for them? But it seems like we can report back to you. Why do you want owners to report how their dogs watch TV?
So it's a long story, but I'll keep it short for the radio. But we're actually interested in how vision changes with age. And I do research that looks at age-related changes with relevance to people. And because dogs live by us a lot, we could potentially look at dogs and actually provide parallels to what we are doing in our lives. So our first step on that is to try and develop a test of vision for dogs. And so we can't have them sit in the optometrist's chair and read the eye chart, obviously. So we really thought outside the box and started to think about maybe video content being something that dogs would pay attention to, because they're very movement oriented. You know, I just got my own puppy and he loves to just look at the squirrels and everything. So that's where we got to. And then we thought, well, why don't we ask people in the real world to tell us about what their dogs like, so that we can apply that to stuff we do in the lab.
So how much feedback have you received so far, and how can we participate?
Great question. We've had a really good interest. We've had about 1,200 responses. I would imagine that most people who've responded are people whose dogs do watch television. But actually, even if your dog doesn't watch television, it's helpful, because we actually show the dogs some videos with you in the home. And you can tell us if your dog's actually cared about the video. So even if you don't think your dog is potentially a TV watcher at home, they might actually surprise you, and it might be a new way to learn a bit more about your dog if you participate.
So we're talking about TV watching by dogs and dog vision research with our guest, Freya Mawad, a veterinary ophthalmologist and professor at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. And if you have questions about how you can participate, join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And we also have a link to the Mawad Lab and the Canine Vision Research Questionnaire on our website at WPR.org/mornings. If you want to reference that at any time, it'll be there for you. So dog owners participating in this study can report how their pets behave in front of a TV. Owners can also show dogs 4 videos you provide. What do these videos show, Freya?
Yeah, so it's very simple content. We figured we would try and provide something that we think already could be interesting to dogs. So
squirrel.
We did a little sort of trial run at home with some dogs. And so there's, I think, a bird, another dog, a truck running past. And I forget what the last one is, but certainly nothing offensive. And certainly many dogs really like some of the content. So, yeah.
So give us what your hypothesis is going forward and how you hope to help dogs in the future. What's the inevitable outcome from this research as you'd like to see it, Freya?
Yeah, so I mean, hypothesis is tricky. I think we probably hypothesized that dogs like watching other dogs is probably the most likely, or squirrels. We kind of all thought that squirrels would be top notch.
Right.
But surprisingly, It's other dogs for sure. Probably because I think they see the TV perhaps as like a window. And so who barks out of the window? What do you bark at out of the window? You probably bark at other dogs. So that's sort of the winner right now. And what that is doing is actually I have a vet student researcher in my lab right now who's doing some actually sort of testing on pet dogs. And we're actually showing some of the sort of top contender subjects to some dogs and seeing how much they pay attention and if they really like watching certain content. And that will then allow us to start to develop an eye chart for dogs. And then instead of, you know, potentially us really doing some vague testing in our clinical tests for dogs, we can actually perhaps sit them down in front of some standardized testing environments and actually ask what they can or cannot see. So
you put that picture in my mind of a dog in the ophthalmologist chair, the ophthalmologist asking the dog number one or number two, number two or number three, just trying to get a better view. So, in the outcome of this study, though, Frey, I would imagine that your hope is to try to find better ways to treat the natural degradation of vision in dogs.
Absolutely. I think our ultimate goal, I see patients every single day when I'm on clinical service that have problems with their vision, and some of that is potentially treatable. And unfortunately, in veterinary medicine, our patients don't come to us when they're mildly affected, you know, when there's a little bit of problem. They come to us when they're really quite obviously bad. And so in some ways, if we could develop some tests that could pick things up earlier, we may actually have more tools to be able to treat, you know, vision problems in dogs much earlier. And we know that vision is one of the senses that dogs really use a lot. Of course, the sense of smell, I can't ignore that, is very important for dogs. But certainly we suspect that with aging, actually a lot of things decline at the same time. So we're also doing some research at the moment to look at how dogs' vision, but also sense of smell declines as they age. So hopefully we can start to really start to support our older pets, just like we perhaps support our older family and friends as well.
And could this research go to help better understand the vision of humans and how it can degrade as they age?
That's my ultimate goal. I think my strong feeling is that there is some elements of the environment that we live in that contribute to the age changes that we see, not just in vision, but perhaps also in the brain and other senses. And our dogs, you know, live with us. They live in our homes. They walk in our yards. They walk with us by our sides to the grocery store and the ballpark and whatever else. So in theory, if there are things in the environment, the things that they are exposed to are similar to what we're exposed to. So if we can find some important factors that affect dog vision, their lifespan is a little shorter than ours. So in fact, we may pick things up much earlier. So in terms of perhaps decades earlier than we would have got to know about it in people. So yes, I think our dogs could easily be our little sort of canary in the coal mine for information.
And how long, Freya, do you expect this survey to remain open for us to participate with our dogs?
It's been open since middle to end of March, and I have a lovely veterinary intern at the moment who is going to be working to present this work in the fall. So my hope is that perhaps we'll close in sometime sort of October, November time. So you've got a little bit of time, but do feel free to participate at your earliest convenience. It only takes about 10 minutes, so it's really fast.
Freya Mowat, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much. It was wonderful to talk to you.
And again, that link can be found at WPR.org/mornings under today's topic with our guest, veterinary ophthalmologist and professor at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine, Freya Mowat. Just ahead, we talk about what can be done to restore trust in journalism, which is, according to Gallup, at an all-time low. I bet you've got your suggestions and we'll want to hear them. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.